Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Sunra, and joining me is my co-host, Brad Harvin. How are you doing, Brad?
Hey, Kyle. I'm doing pretty good. I'm recovering from a busy weekend with the family. I mean, even today, like, I had to act like my in-laws and have a cup of coffee at 3 o'clock in the morning just to get to this point. But I had that cup of coffee. I'm ready to rock and roll and talk some fantasy football with you guys.
3 to 5 a.m. coffee seems like it's the best time to consume stuff. So
I definitely approve.
Yeah. And a third voice here. Third episode of this bit of a dynasty look back series, looking back at 2021, trying to bring forward 2022. Somebody I thought really good fantasy mind, I thought could bring some good insight to the listeners today. So everyone, please welcome Dr. James Ferretti.
Wow, thank you. High praise there, Kyle. Much appreciated. Really happy to be here and to be introduced to the audience here in such a glowing fashion. And yeah, I'm just excited. I'm happy to be here and talk some fantasy football.
And we'll affectionately refer to him as Doc for the rest of the episode. Preferred nickname or the fantasy sports doc, as you, I know you, yeah, do refer to yourself, and that is your Twitter account, Doc. But yeah, we'll get to some more Doc stuff later. But yeah, well, I guess actually we'll start with the question we've been asking all our guests here. Any general lessons on the 2021 season that can kind of be taken forward into 2022?
Well, it's a good question. I think I'll start with something. It's kind of basic, but maybe it's useful. The elite quarterback is a real difference maker. Now, not necessarily elite player, but elite production at the quarterback position. And I think that was something that that I took away from the season. There was a lot of, I'm seeing this repeating narrative, and I wanted to kind of point it out to the listeners and the viewers that there's a narrative of there's a quarterback, and he can run and he's athletic, but maybe his passing efficiency isn't that great or his completion percentage isn't that good. And we saw it with Cam Newton back in 2014 before he broke football in 2015 and had his MVP season. We saw it with Josh Allen when he first came into the league, wasn't that efficient, but very athletic and can run. And we just saw a great example of what he's capable of doing this past weekend. And he was the number one quarterback this year. And Lamar Jackson is another great example of same thing. Athletic guy, can run, gets a lot of fantasy points, can't throw the football, or so they say. And then he had his MVP season and he broke football. And then this year, Jalen Hurts, same narrative. Athletic, can run, not really that great throwing the football. And he finished as a top five quarterback. So things to keep in mind is that this narrative just keeps getting repeated and these guys continuously get pushed down on draft lists, and it doesn't really matter the format, super flex, non-super flex. These guys are there in the later rounds and they end up being really, really great values. And just something that I think, and maybe we can talk about it, not really like, you know, earth shattering, but just guys that kind of fit that mold a little bit, or maybe the narrative fits going forward into 2022, and guys to be on the lookout for and maybe jump a little bit in ADP because you're getting that potential to get that really elite production that could put you over the top.
Because if you just look back to that FPC Dynasty League we did, Hurts went to the fifth round, 503.
Yeah. Right.
I remember when Gladys sniped me on Ryan Tannehill in the third round, and I was super disappointed on that. And later had to trade up for Kirk Cousins, but man, Jalen Hurts was right there for the taking. And I went two running backs, but another time, because you mentioned another quarterback, Doc, Lamar Jackson. And if we look back to the start of your draft, 108 was where you were slotted, and you went Lamar Jackson, who kind of fell to you there. I know I was talking about the trade up, and you were really you were hesitant to move away from that pick until you know for sure that Jackson wasn't going to be there. It seemed like it.
Yeah, that was exactly the case. And honestly, I was a little surprised that he was there. But once he was there, it's like, I really felt like, especially given the super flex format, I said, this is a guy that has the possibility of being the number one quarterback in football. And even with, the injuries that he had towards the end of the year, like, he still ended up being a top 10 quarterback, and on a points per game basis, I think he was number 8. And there was certainly potential for more had he been able to finish out the season. And I think I'm not going out on a limb by saying the fact that he wasn't available to me towards the end of the year was probably why I finished in third, as opposed to, you know, potentially finishing higher. That was a big loss for me. So, you know, that definitely was unlucky, but I feel very fortunate to have him going forward.
Well, and I'll say the same thing. Like my first round pick of Dak Prescott, the pick immediately after yours, you know, the weeks where he didn't perform to par, the idea of taking the quarterback early was fine. I just, I didn't appreciate Joe Burrow as a good enough option and felt like I needed to trade up to get Dak Prescott. I traded with you, Brad. We've talked about this in the past. And I kind of look back now and I know I gave up that 112, 201 that we kind of basically traded draft slots for a few rounds just so I could get up that, to get that 109 to get Dak. And you went Jonathan Taylor, Trevor Lawrence. Ultimately, the play is probably Jonathan Taylor, Joe Burrow. Right. And I mean, that would have been looking a lot better on either of us, but certainly me if I didn't make that trade up, because you know how much I love Jonathan Taylor. So again, kudos to you. But just Brad, I want to get your thoughts kind of on the kind of the quarterbacks around there, right? Like Lamar Jackson falling. Like, what did you think being two picks away, being right behind Doc, and with Lamar Jackson still available? I know obviously you're willing to trade with Dak, but if Lamar had fallen to you at 109, would you have been willing to do the same trade with me, or would you have just stuck with Jackson there?
If I would have been stuck at the 109 and had my pick in hindsight, having, you know, the opportunity to select either Lamar Jackson or Dak Prescott at that position and learning from this, you know, just the Superflex dynasty and how important it is to have an elite quarterback, which is definitely something that I suffered throughout the season on, which we've pretty much talked ad nauseum about a few times. But at the same time, I mean, when you moved up, and I think I mentioned this to you, I thought you were going for Jonathan Taylor because I thought, because I knew how much you liked him and everything like that. So I was a little shocked. But then I certainly understood what was happening here and what I potentially missed out on. But, we'll see how things play out, trades and all that kind of good stuff. But in hindsight, if I was at the 109 and I had my, opportunity to get Lamar Jackson or Dak Prescott, I would have been happy with either one of those. And I don't have certainly no issue with taking Jackson the spot before. Certainly Doc has kind of already mentioned the value of an athletic quarterback that can do it all. Sure, he was banged up a little bit this season and missed some games, but still finishing in the top 10 and just to have him in the future is certainly something to be excited about.
So Brad, I have a question for you because I'm really interested in the pick that you made at the wheel because you were what, the 201, right?
Yes.
So you ended up going with Trevor Lawrence, and I know Kyle mentioned Joe Burrow. Me personally, I don't think anybody can fault you for that because we're looking at Joe Burrow through the spectacles of today, but we have to roll it back 4 months. And he was not looking good. His knee was very shaky. They were saying
he's right at the limit. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right at the limit of coming back from an ACL, which it really was. I mean, it was like right at 9 months, which is kind of, really pushing the envelope. So did that kind of play into your process there and kind of push you toward, did you just go on the side of youth and potential, or like, did you consider anybody else other than Trevor Lawrence in that spot? That's what I'm really curious about that.
Probably the only other person that I thought of at that spot was a youth movement with Justin Fields. The Joe Burrow being there, I was concerned about the offensive line. I knew that he, had some weapons. I wasn't sure how, well Jamar Chase was going to obviously pan out this season or Joe Burrow himself, because he was certainly my fantasy MVP in a redraft league. I went and got him in a trade, and now I'm going to New York City. Woo! But I guess it was kind of focused on the youth movement, Trevor Lawrence. Of course, maybe a little bit of homerism being down here in Jacksonville as well. But just everything that I saw with Lawrence heading into the draft, and certainly I thought that he would have better weapons. Certainly Chark went down early. Marvin Jones was Marvin Jones, but Chenault was not what everybody thought they were that he was going to be.
He lost ETN too.
Oh yeah, you know, lost ETN
before the season even started.
Exactly. So definitely missed some pieces. So kind of anxious to see how things pan out here. I mean, I guess we're still looking for a coach and all that good stuff, but hopefully get some pieces back. Get some pieces of free agency. Hopefully in the draft as well. And hopefully Trevor Lawrence can live up to his potential.
I do want to kind of just revert back two episodes ago to our league champion Akili and the move he made at 105, taking Justin Herbert.
Right.
I think pretty, if you had told anyone, Superflex Dynasty startup, the first four picks to be Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, Christian McCaffrey, that's probably like maybe what we'd expect and to be conventional. I know Akili, so I wasn't so surprised that he made the pick, but it would be maybe surprising to see, Herbert ahead of Jackson at that point. But it seems like now the conventional thing would be to have Herbert ahead of Jackson, maybe even ahead of Murray in Dynasty. So Doc, do you remember what your thoughts were at the time when he made that pick and the ultimate rejoice of, I know how happy you were when Jackson fell to you and how that kind of leads into all that.
Honestly, I didn't really think it was egregious. I think some of these things come down to personal preference. And that's kind of one of the dangers of just looking at rank lists and things like that. It's like when you're talking about your first round pick, there are guys that kind of slot into the middle of the first round, the beginning of the first round, the end of the first round, just by ADP. But the thing is, you only get one crack at the guy that you want. So if that's the guy you want, then you go get him. And, if he ends up being ranked, the sixth quarterback or the seventh quarterback, and you take him with the fourth or the fifth pick, then, I really can appreciate that. I really favor that because that's kind of, I don't even want to say planting your flag, but that's going with getting the guy that you want and not really going with somebody else's rank list or whatever. So he had Justin Herbert ranked higher than those other players and he was right. And he got to reap the benefits for it. So really credit to him for whatever his analysis was, he was correct. From my standpoint, they're all in the same tier for me. The real tier break was right around Dak Prescott, and he would have been firmly in the same tier as those other main quarterbacks. The only thing was at the time he had that little kind of shoulder thing, which didn't initially worry me from a medical standpoint until they started bringing in the doctors from the Texas Rangers and saying that this is similar to a pitching injury. And I also do analysis for fantasy baseball, and anytime a pitcher gets hurt, it's a whole different category of analysis, and that gave me a little bit of trepidation. So I was really on the fence there with, do I want Dak Prescott or not at that time? As it turned out, it didn't matter, and there was a decent chance it wasn't going to matter. But with your first round pick, it's like you want to kind of minimize your risk as much as you can, given the fact that it's football, and football, it's a dangerous sport.
And I mean, I had similar kind of feelings of the tier drop off after Dak Prescott as QB6, and which is again why I felt the need to trade up so aggressively to try and get one of those two. As soon as I could see, McCaffrey and then Dalvin Cook and then Hill, and it's like, oh, these quarterbacks are falling. Let me get there before they fall too much further, right? And I think that's kind of, again, the thinking that we're all having is, again, the especially the top end of this of quarterback tier in production is kind of where you want to be. It's a club. You're either in that club or you're not. And I don't know, I kind of view it maybe Burrow. I think Burrow's kind of jumped into that club, but I still feel like it's still those same six, now seven guys, if you include Joe Burrow. Right. And I mean, he was the eighth quarterback taken, really. Like, so Brad, you took Lawrence, and then it was a kind of a bit of a break at quarterback until 208, which again, Akili took. So kudos to him for going, getting that, maybe arguably the best pick in both rounds, really. But I would say maybe, Burrow, Jefferson next to each other, that was pretty good too. But all to say, I think it's still those same tier quarterbacks now that are going to be drafted kind of in the same spots. Now Burrow probably jumps into the first round, and that's maybe the only difference, but we still view that same six, seven quarterbacks as locked in as the first seven that should go in dynasty startups.
So here's the thing that gets really interesting for me. If you want to pivot off of that a little bit, because again, we're talking about elite players, but the thing that I want to keep bringing back is you don't necessarily need elite players. You need elite production. So, the guys that that really stand out for me, again, according to the same narrative, Justin Fields. So he had a 58% completion percentage this year, passing wise. But once he got rolling, 4 out of his last 5 games were elite. And his ADP, right, I think, in redraft is going to be squarely in the double digit rounds. But even in Dynasty Superflex startup, you're still going to get a discount where I don't think he's going in. He's not going in the first round. I mean, what would you guys say? End of the second round, beginning of the third. Have you seen him lower than that?
Yeah, well, so in our draft, like, it's I think Trey Lance is kind of the same thing you could say about Fields. I think maybe there's a bit more positive spin on Lance just because I've heard Scott Connor talk about this. We haven't seen Lance fail, so there's less stink on him, right? So like I don't actually expect much of like startup ADP falling for Lance or Fields in spite of or Lawrence even in spite of how bad things were. So you look at how they went in our startup again, Lawrence at the 201, Lance 211, Fields 301. Like even that seemed late to me, Fields 301, because I would have strongly considered it actually at your spot, Brad, like going either Lawrence or Fields there. So I doubt he gets like I think this was maybe a rare startup where he actually fell to the third round. It might happen this year, but I think it's going to be the same thing where it'll be rare. I think the all three of those 2021 rookie quarterbacks will fall into the back end of the second round. Maybe, and again, if someone's convicted enough early into the second round, who knows? In some drafts, again, and maybe, you know, if let's say McCaffrey and Cook don't go off the board, you know, Hamed was pretty convicted at wide receiver, so we'll say he always takes Tyreek Hill there no matter what. I know, Doc, you and Hamed go back a bit, and you know he started really well, so I think you can attest to that. But I mean, if let's say Jackson, Herbert, Dak, they're all gone by 106, Doc, would you then pivot from quarterbacks, or would you already have dipped into that next tier, like the Burrow, Lawrence, Fields group there, and would that have pushed those guys up if the rest of the league went heavy at quarterback, right? So it also might come league dependent too.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that's the thing. It's like kind of being flexible, but that's, you know, what I'm kind of driving at is if you look at one of these other guys, you look at Justin Fields, you look at Trey Lance, you still are getting a discount because they still both have, you know, that top five upside. Like with Justin Fields, so what I would do in that situation is I probably would go for a position player. And then I would look to take one of them in maybe the second round. And then I'm getting both of them as opposed to taking the next quarterback there. And then what comes next, you know, the narrative again with Justin Fields, he could be Jalen Hurts 2.0 next year, given all the changes and you know, what he's shown already. The thing that I want to point out is with these young quarterbacks, it's like they grow as players, they get better. Like growth isn't always linear. So there's going to be new and almost assuredly better coaching in Chicago. And once he was able to run, he put up some elite games towards the end of the year before he got hurt and before Chicago kind of shut it all down. Trey Lance could easily be Lamar Jackson MVP 2.0 because his completion percentage was actually over 60 this year. And when he was playing, he's pretty good. So if he ends up getting the starting job, I really think sky's the limit. And that's kind of the way that I look at it. If you know, you get the chance to get an elite position player and you still have the potential for a high floor, but an elite upside quarterback, that's, you know, how you can kind of play it a little bit if all the other quarterbacks are off the board and that's how you want to do it.
When I saw both Fields and Lance kind of falling, you know, in the second round, I was pushing for trades, trying to get in there. Obviously it wasn't as aggressive as I need to be, but once again, learning curve. But yeah, I mean, I saw them fall, and I just thought, you know, the opportunity to pair one of them with Lawrence, I was going to be hopefully sitting pretty for the future. So yeah, it definitely caught my eye that they were falling towards the end of the second. And then you said Fields was the 301, I believe. So yeah, wow. I was trying.
Yeah, because I didn't think you taking Lawrence at the 201 seemed out of place. Like I was surprised that there was kind of a full round difference between Lawrence and Fields. Like I remember being in some startups where there was a 1 or 2 pick difference between Lawrence and Fields, not a full round. So it's tough to know that there, right? So it again, kind of looking at hindsight, but looking back, we, again, are talking about production. So one thing I did want to kind of talk up, and you have referenced it a couple times already, Doc, is the fantasy points per game. So I looked it up, quarterback scoring, just conventional scoring on using Fantasy Pros. Points per game wise, Josh Allen at 124.56 fantasy points per game. And then a bit of a gap, again, just slightly bit of a gap, when we're talking at this range, between him and Herbert, who was number two. So again, good call on Akili to kind of, we might have saw Herbert as early going as the QB4, and he still outperformed that in terms of ranking. So again, good call by Akili there. Yeah, it's the championship winning calls, right? When picking on the margins before the clarity, right? Was okay, Herbert, amazing rookie season. Was he gonna, can he duplicate that? And yeah, 23.28 fantasy points per game. A little bit closer to Herbert than Herbert was to Allen, but Tom Brady at 22.75 was the QB3. And I mean, again, that dynasty wise, that's obviously a bit of an outlier. He's not going to go as QB3 in dynasty, but you know, redraft, he was still a significant value. So maybe a bit of a mistake by a lot of people to kind of let Brady fall as far as he did. Kyler Murray was QB4, Patrick Mahomes QB5, Jalen Hurts QB6, kind of like you're saying, Doc. And I guess, and then Lamar Jackson QB7 right there, Aaron Rodgers QB8. Hurts to me might be that one guy that can kind of jump ahead of those 2021 rookies. Like, it wouldn't shock me if someone decides to go Hurts instead of Fields or Lance, because I do wonder, like, Hurts going to the Eagles, like you're saying, Doc, like we've been kind of like, so many people have been betting against him for so long that he's been a value. I don't think he's going to go in the fifth round again, like he did in our startup, which seemed like that was kind of a pretty normal place for him to go. And I think he's the guy that maybe sees the biggest change in ADP. I don't think any of this group is necessarily going to fall in terms of where they go. I think he's just, you know, he might go ahead in the rankings. Like, he might be QB8 off the board, sure, in some startups. And, you know, if someone's sour enough on Dak and he falls, maybe even QB7. But I don't see him going ahead of Burrow. I think if someone sees that on the clock, I don't know, maybe someone's out there that's a Hurts truther, but he's someone that I think could jump up and really massively improve his ADP. So now it's, though, is it too late to invest in Hurts? Cause now the price is already up there, right? Like a guy like Fields or Lance or even Lawrence, even if they don't lose a massive ADP and become value, as long as they don't jump up a round or two, maybe you still view that as value and they still have room to grow.
Exactly. I think it's really important to kind of, you know, call out to the audience that, like, you don't want to pay for last year's stats. So, like, you know, as far as like jumping up Jalen Hurts, I agree. I think he is going to jump up in at least a tier, maybe two. But for me, I'm much more interested in finding the 2022 version of Jalen Hurts, not reinvesting in the 2021 version of Jalen Hurts, because what made him the value was that he had that depressed ADP. If he, you know, his ADP jumps up, you know, whatever it is, 20, 30 spaces or, you know, a few rounds, then you're really playing on the margins. And if he doesn't produce, or, you know, he gets hurt or something, it's like the risk benefit switches much more into the other direction. I think the assets are much better allocated looking for the next guy who could have that high ceiling, make that big leap, like Lamar Jackson before he was MVP, or, you know, could Trey Lance or Justin Fields be one of those guys? I think they certainly could. And you take that discount and use those other picks to get those, you know, stud wide receivers, stud running backs, whatever the case may be, make another investment. And if it all comes together, then you really got something.
Just to keep going on the QB fantasy points per game. So mentioned the top eight.
I want to interject real quick, because there's one guy that you forgot. Yeah, if you count the games that he started at quarterback only, Taysom Hill was number five on a points per game basis, which I don't know how much you can carry that forward considering his coach just retired and he's got a Liz Frank injury in his foot, but the narrative fits with him, right? Not considered to be an accurate quarterback. I mean, we've heard Dan the B-League rant on Taysom Hill at least three or four times this year, and if you guys have the opportunity, go to the Going for Two site and look those up because they're priceless, but he despises Taysom Hill. But here's the thing, Taysom Hill, when he's a quarterback, whether he's a good quarterback or not by NFL standards, he produces fantasy wise. He's elite as a quarterback fantasy wise, irrespective of whether he's a good, even a decent quarterback NFL player attribute wise. So he warrants a mention. I can't imagine that his acquisition cost this year is going to be anything.
He's not going in the fifth round like Jalen Hurts. Like this I no, would exactly
be,
right.
Like I would this be is, stunned if it costs you anything. I mean, he's got to be going probably in a 25 round draft. You might be able to get him at the last pick. At this point,
easily attainable trade wise too, right? I mean, you could probably throw 1,000%. A third in even some super flex leagues and might get him, but certainly probably a second probably does it kind of anywhere.
Except in our league, because I have him. And Gerson, if you're watching, don't send me any offers because I'm not trading him for a fourth round pick.
Gerson, our previous guest. Fair so enough. Hopefully the support continues on. Yes. Okay. So yeah, aside from Taysom Hill, but Dak Prescott and Joe Burrow, 20.66 for Dak, 20.52 fantasy points per game for Joe Burrow. And I think, again, both of those guys coming off the significant season ending injuries the year before, I think also have a bit of room to grow into, even if it's 1 point per game more, and kind of to where like Jalen Hurts was at 21.41, or even, you know, Mahomes at 22.01, and kind of maybe a little bit of lower season for Mahomes. Like he has room to grow there. So maybe those guys jump to what Mahomes did this year, because like, so again, Dak at 20.6, Burrow 20.5, Matthew Stafford 20.4. I mean, if Dak and Burrow kind of repeat their productions, and so does Stafford, that price acquisition cost, because I mean, again, Dak might dip into the second round this year, next year, but probably still going to go in first round of startups, super flex. And now Burrow's definitely, I think, jumping up there. Stafford's not going to be going in the first round. And actually, I mean, in ours, he went 306. And even that I thought was a little early. Dylan was also taking him after going Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, kind of needing a quarterback. I was almost shocked he didn't go the Viking stack with Kirk Cousins, but I mean, Cousins finished at 19.21 fantasy points per game. So, you know, 1.2 points less than Stafford. So obviously that was the right decision to make there. I still think third round's probably going to be a little earlier than what we expect to see him. But if Stafford's producing there, he might also be, again, maybe one of those where, again, we'll see. Maybe if the Rams go all the way to the Super Bowl and win it, that might be one where it ups his value enough. But I mean, to your same points, I mean, if he's producing as, what was he, I guess, points per game, he was the QB 11, or I guess if you're counting Taysom Hill, 12. So I suppose that fits in that definition too, if he's going in the third, fourth round of a startup. And then quarterback production, just real quick, drops after that. After Cousins at 19.21, it's Russell Wilson at 17.77, which I think we can understand he was hurt. So he's someone that could maybe bounce up. I don't know that. And I think everyone understands why his production dip is because of the injury. That was clear. So like in our draft, he went 209. He went just like two picks before Trey Lance. Again, that'll probably be right around that range, right? You'll see some startups where Wilson's going ahead of Lawrence Lance Fields. You might see some other startups where he's going immediately after. I think that's kind of a key point. I guess actually maybe that's a question for both of you, Brad and James. Like where do you guys think Wilson is relative to the 2021 rookies, those top three that we keep talking about?
I like the rookies ahead of Wilson. I mean, he had the injury. I mean, I guess a lot kind of depends on where, if he is going to go somewhere else, if he's hopping on a bus heading to Pittsburgh or Denver's, whatever the case may be, that could change things. But even before the injury, he just really didn't seem like himself. Still has the accuracy. I mean, certainly had the weapons up there. Although DK certainly, took a major slide as the season progressed, which I knew he would.
He was expended too much energy at all those house parties he was
there
having.
There you go. My feeling in a startup and when I'm thinking of the future, I like the 2021 class ahead of him. So once again, going back to the draft, when I saw someone take him at 209, I was like, oh my gosh, I still have a chance to try and get in there and get one of these guys. But like I said, wasn't aggressive enough. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Doc?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm going to go the other way. I think Russell Wilson is one of those players who always seems to outproduce his draft position and still has that same elite upside. I know he dealt with some injuries this year. I don't know how much like the feud that he was having with, you know, Seattle and the front office and the coaching staff, like, came into play. But he's a passionate guy, and he's a sensitive guy too. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but I think that there are some people where it kind of rolls off of them, and there are other people where it genuinely affects them. And I think he's one of those people. So I think all those distractions, I think that affected his play, but he's got that same ability. He's got that rushing upside, and he finds a way to make plays. I would like it better if he would be moving on, so all those kind of questions are answered. And I think he's somebody that could be rejuvenated in a new spot. The difference is that I think recency bias is going to play. Like, these quarterbacks that we're talking about, Trey Lance and Justin Fields, everybody knows about them. Sky's the limit for them. Like, they're on a rocket ship pointed to the moon, and their cost in dynasty startups is going to be equivalent to that. But to get Russell Wilson at a discount and still have him have the potential to be a top five quarterback, I think I would opt for that and take my chances and try to load up at other positions. And then again, still have that opportunity for elite production at the quarterback position, if not an elite quarterback, which he may very well be, depending on what your definition of that is. But he has that potential, top five potential.
Gotcha.
One more question for you both. In a startup, you're sitting there. Let's take the three rookies out. Let's say they're all gone. And, you know, I guess at that point, probably 10 quarterbacks have gone off the board. And let's actually ask this two ways. You've held out and you want to get, you know, quarterback 11 or 12. And maybe you want to get quarterback 11. You don't want to be the last one to get a quarterback. Are you taking Russell Wilson or Jalen Hurts?
I think I'm going to jump on the Hurts train and take him they have to right the ship there with the receivers at some point. Granted, I know he has a little trouble with throwing the balls, but I mean, when he has the ball in his hand, he is dynamic similar to Kyler Murray, with his scrambling ability and his, ability to make plays out of the pocket. And I know it's not just the injuries. I just feel like Wilson's fading a little bit. And I'm not going to say that, I'm completely fading him, because I am certainly interested to see if he goes somewhere else. And depending on where he goes, it could be the right situation. I could be, sticking my foot in my mouth in a couple months. I'm not sure. But as of right now, I would hop on the Hurts train.
All right. Be completely honest. If I'm in that position, I'll take either one. Like, if we're doing a podcast, you can't see what I'm doing, I'm flipping a coin. It doesn't matter. I'll take either one. They're pretty much equal to me. And I think you can make an argument that Russell Wilson might have a little bit. He's done it before. Hurts had a great season this year. You know, if Russell Wilson ends up moving on and going somewhere, he's probably going to have more potential longevity. Jalen Hurts basically had to finish as a top 10 quarterback just to get another year's like seal of approval from the GM. But I think they both had the potential to be top five quarterbacks. So that wouldn't be a decision that would keep me up at night. I would be happy either way.
It's funny because it's a decision that I'm kind of really struggling with. Like, who's my QB8 in Dynasty? And I've flipped it. At times it's been Fields. At times it's been Hurts. I think right now, if you look at my rankings at the moment I'm recording this, which is on January 25th, I think it's Wilson. And I think to answer the question the way I asked it, if I'm having to pick who's my QB1, I think I do. It's strange to think because of the ages. I still feel, even though Wilson doesn't have the draft capital, it's funny. We hurt for the draft capital, but Wilson was a third round pick, I'm pretty sure. But
right, he was.
I mean, he's still probably right now. Again, he was hurt this year, so didn't show it, but he's still probably the fourth best quarterback in the NFL. And if Brady and Rodgers retire, he's probably the second best quarterback in the NFL. Okay, maybe Allen's passed him after what he's shown, and maybe Burrow's up there too. But so he's probably still the fourth best quarterback at the very worst. So if I'm having to pick my QB1, I think I feel safer with Wilson and I want that. Now, if it's the QB2, if I've already gone with my first quarterback and I get a chance at my second guy, I think I might go Hurts there for the chance at the upside and take on to that train. So if I've gone with a Herbert or a Kyler Murray Mm-hmm. I think I might rather pair them with Hurts than I would Russell Wilson if I wanted to kind of go that route. So that's kind of how I make that distinction. I still feel safer with Russ, even without knowing where his destination is, which I guess, again, talks to just his quarterback play from a quality perspective, not even from a fantasy perspective.
I mean, the one thing about Russell Wilson, just real quick, is, I mean, he's at odds with philosophies with his coach. I mean, we've kind of seen, you know, we had the offensive coordinator in there that where they quote unquote let Russ cook. I mean, he was amazing. And that offense was ridiculous. They weren't winning as many games and they weren't doing it the way that Pete Carroll might have wanted, but he was having phenomenal production. And that's what's really holding him back. It's not his talent level per se. It's kind of differences in philosophy. So if he were to move on and go somewhere where that wasn't a factor and somebody was bringing him in because of his attributes and because of the things that he could do, and they were going to kind of take the governor off or take the reins off of him, oh baby, like you might end up having the, you know, top two or top three quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he could even outproduce Patrick Mahomes. He could be the number two quarterback in the NFL. And that's really interesting to me, especially at a discount. So, you know, I guess you kind of have to think, do you think he's going to move on? And if you do, maybe you bump him up a little bit or a lot of it.
We have spent this entire episode talking about quarterbacks. I mean, it is the NFL, so that is fair. And we get super flex kind of the importance there. But again, the importance of these top 12 quarterbacks, I said it before, Wilson was the quarterback 13 in points per game, 14 again, if you count Taysom Hill, I'm sorry about that, at 17.7 points. And he's about a point and a half per game less than Kirk Cousins. And even Cousins is about 1.2 fantasy points per game less than Stafford. And that's where it kind of clusters. I was talking about like Stafford's just a 0.1 per game, point per game less than Burrow, who's 0.1 per game less than Dak. So that kind of clusters there. But you saw Stafford at QB 11, bit of a drop to Cousins at QB 12. And then from Cousins to Wilson, a bit of a drop to get to QB 13. Now, if you count Jameis Winston and Nick Foles, if you count Taysom Hill, Winston and Foles are QBs 15, 16 at 17.2 and 16.8 fantasy points per game. If we exclude them for the short sample sizes, the next guy up is Ryan Tannehill at 16.6. So even that, to compare it to Russell Wilson, still a drop of more than a fantasy point. And then it's about a half point per game from Tannehill down to Garoppolo. And then it's kind of more condensed. Garoppolo, Carr, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, all between 15.6 and 15.97 fantasy points. So it kind of like there's clusters, and then it got to right around that QB 12 range and you started to see gaps. Like if you think about Stafford, a QB 11, 20.4 fantasy points per game, and then Tannehill, QB 16. So only four spots difference, but it's 16.61. So almost four fantasy points per game difference.
Right.
So I think the big point that we were all saying, and you kind of started with this, right, Doc, is the elite quarterbacks. I think in Superflex or one quarterback, I want one of those top 12 guys that we've talked about. And I think, I think it's a clear top seven. I think that's kind of a tier, and maybe you have mini tiers within that top seven. Like I can get an argument if it's my top tier is just Allen, Mahomes, and Herbert, or if those three and Jackson and Murray because of the rushing ability, or if you expand to include Dak and Burrow, right? So whatever, I think those top seven are clear. And then to me, the next five, again, kind of jumble in any order almost between Lawrence, Fields, Lance, and then Hurts and Wilson. But I think it either Superflex or one QB, I want one of those 12. And it's a nice kind of clear cutoff point, which is kind of easy and convenient. Maybe some inconvenient things have happened with some quarterbacks that, you know, that list isn't 13 or 14, which is to help with that. But I think that 12 cutoff is pretty clear. I think it gets really complicated when you get past that. And I almost don't want the tough decisions there. I want to just give me one of those top 12. And if I get two of those top 12 in Superflex, even better. But if not, getting that QB 2 is because we saw how much it clusters as soon as it drops past QB 12, QB 13, like down to QB 16, Tannehill, like, and then that's all really close together all the way till almost the back end of the, you know, the 20s. So you can replace that a lot better. So again, get those top 12, I think is the takeaway. So So I think other lessons learned, James. I know we did one lesson. That was supposed to be lessons, plural, but that was one. But I guess
it was a good lesson. It was good. It's important.
I think it was two lessons, because we talked about elite quarterback production, and then we talked about kind of evaluating those quarterbacks with the not so good passing percentage and the athleticism, and are there ones that, you know, the narrative has shown us that maybe they're the ones that are primed to make a leap. So surprise, surprise, another one of my lessons as a doctor, health is the great equalizer. So the difference between Jonathan Taylor's MVP caliber season and Derrick Henry's campaign was Derrick Henry got injured and Jonathan Taylor didn't. I mean, that was basically it. You can have the best squad, you know, in the league, but the health landscape in the NFL is so volatile. You need luck there too. So here's the lesson that I came up with, is that sometimes you can kind of make your own luck with injury analysis. So early on in the season, sure, you want to diversify your portfolio. You want to take other guys' backups. You want to shoot for upside. But as the season rolls on, you want to start looking towards getting your own insurance and backing up your own guys and giving away some of that upside for insurance. And Kyle, I know we talked about this on the last episode of the two-point conversion, but I'll reiterate it briefly. There's the story of I had Antonio Gibson on multiple teams, and one of them, it was in a redraft league, and I ended up picking up Jared Patterson back in week 9. I had an open spot on my bench, but I was pretty concerned about the whole shin splint thing that we talked about. And as it turned out, he ended up dealing with some other injuries and, ironically enough, got taken out in the championship game because of COVID, of all things. And none of those other injuries, but I had Jared Patterson ready to go and he had a really good game. And, you know, sure enough, week 17, like I really needed that production and, you know, he did really good for me. And someone else in my league said to me, that I was quote unquote lucky that I had him on my bench. And that's the thing. It wasn't luck. I was prepared. And through that preparation, like that, thinking about insurance, backing up your guys as the year rolls on, I kind of created my own luck. So, you know, that's kind of the lesson that I want to put out there and give to the viewers is, you know, upside isn't as important as the season rolls on, because you run, you know, somebody gets taken out, multiple players get taken out in week 15, 16, you know, maybe you can't trade at that point. You need healthy bodies. And the team, I firmly believe that, especially in late parts of the season, the fantasy football team with the healthiest players has the best chance to win. And talent is less important than production. If you had King Henry on your team in week 16, didn't do you any good. You had Jared Patterson, you got 20 points. Now you're not going to think that way in the beginning of the year, but at the end of the year, that could be what you need to put you over the hump to get you a title.
It's funny that we're talking Washington, because again, going back to your picks in the startup draft, it's funny because you know, your first four picks, I certainly admired the build, because that's kind of my strategy too. You know, the quarterback in the first round and then three straight running backs. After going Lamar Jackson, you went Antonio Gibson, Ezekiel Elliott, and Austin Eckler.
I traded into the spot to get Eckler. So there's kind of two things there, because full disclosure, that's not how I set out to build the team. So part of the reason that team even got built the way that it did was because of Hamid. Because Hamid was right before me and I had CD Lamb queued up in round 3 and he was ready to go. And I said, there's no way this lunatic is taking 3 wide receivers in a row. And sure enough, he takes CD Lamb and I'm like, okay, now what? And the way I looked at it was Ezekiel Elliott was a first round talent and it's a third round, so I'm going to take him. And then a couple of picks went by and there's another first round talent that's still on the board. And I had some conversations with B-League and I was able to trade into that spot specifically to get Austin Eckler. If Austin Eckler goes before that pick comes up, I don't make that trade. I traded to get Austin Eckler when he was available. Then I got on the horn with B-League and I was like, hey, bud, well, what's it going to take to make this happen? I want Austin Eckler on my team. That's how high I had him ranked. So the way I ended up looking at it was I was going to get 2 first round talents plus a stud quarterback. And I thought really highly of Antonio Gibson. So I just kind of ended up with those guys and I'll figure out the rest later. And I really got lucky because Cooper Kupp had a triple crown year and I ended up getting him later. That wasn't by design. That was luck. So sometimes you got to get lucky, and it's better to be lucky than good in some cases, like it was for me this year.
Well, I mean, we talked about the Cooper Cup thing, Brad. I think was that the episode with Eric, the Pros with Joes episode, I believe.
I believe so.
Well, we just talked about how, like, Dynasty redraft, like almost any league, the Jonathan Taylor Cooper Cup stack was totally attainable for anyone to have. And I mean, I talked about in 21 leagues, I had that combo in one league, and I feel like there's a lot of, like, there's most leagues I was in that combo didn't exist, right? Like, someone, one manager had Taylor and different manager had Cooper Cup. So, like, Cooper Cup in general was just like a screaming steal. And that was like kind of the last thing I wanted to talk about before this. But, like, with Gibson, like, it seems like that seemed more value than production pick. Whereas, like, with Lamar Jackson, you got both. You got the value of the quarterback, but also the production there. So that was kind of an easy pick to take, frankly. Like, that was why I was trying to trade up that spot to get him. But like with Gibson, it seems like you immediately went for, I want the value. And I mean, I don't know if it was by the design, but then you got the production later, like Zeke Eckler wise, to kind of fill in the production to where you were missing out maybe with Gibson, who still actually produced pretty well this year, to be fair.
Yeah, it was just best player available for me at that point, and I was really high on him. We had talked about him, and I was like, I felt like I kind of had to put my money where my mouth was at that point. And I was really high on him. I thought he had a chance to take a lot of production away from JD McKissick, and it turned out that it didn't quite work out that way. I don't know how much Fitzmagic's injury had, Ryan Fitzpatrick's injury had to do with that. We never really got to see what that offense could do because of his injury and just it never worked out. So I still think he has that potential. I don't know if we're going to see it, but the potential is still there. So I'm still excited for him going forward. I still think he can be one of those guys that moves up into the first round in 2023. If he has the kind of season next year that I thought he might have this year.
And so it's funny because we both kind of planted our flag on guys we thought would be top five running backs right in that range. McCaffrey, Cook, Barkley, Taylor, Kamara, Harris. Those were the first six running backs off the board. RB7, I take Nick Chubb. RB8, you take Antonio Gibson, back-to-back picks. And again, both of us had them ranked as top five dynasty running backs entering last season. Honestly, a year later, I kind of think you're the one that's right, because I'm looking at my rankings now and I actually have Antonio Gibson ranked inside my top five in terms of dynasty running backs. You started showing enough of the pass catching work as well and kind of excelling at it and again, a lot of that happened with McKissick injured, but now it's the point where, I don't know, McKissick seems more expendable to them because they can rely on Gibson as the pass catcher, and they showed Patterson kind of the early down guy. Maybe that's more effective than Gibson is the early down guy and McKissick the pass catcher. I almost feel like that's what would work best for Gibson's fantasy value, especially if he could continue to get the goal line carries, which he did throughout his rookie season too. So like that touchdown upside is certainly there. So I'm with you, Doc. I was a little hesitant last year. Like, and I know my guy was DeAndre Swift, so I guess that was my last question here. So if I had taken Eckler at 312 instead of taking DeAndre Swift like I did, and Swift was sitting there was Swift to you, like with the pass catching ability, was he viewed as someone that you would have traded up for, or because he hadn't done it yet, like we saw Eckler do, you would have not traded up into the fourth to get Swift?
It's not that I'm down on Swift in any way, shape or form, but I just thought that there was, and it didn't turn out this way, but I thought that there was a chance where he may, at least for this year, end up kind of becoming like a scat back kind of back, and Jamal Williams ended up taking up a lot more production than he ended up doing. So I would not have made that trade, and I would have been wrong. But I can tell you honestly, I wouldn't have made the trade, and it's not because I dislike him as a player, but I saw Eckler as a first round fantasy football potential talent. And I think his season, the previous year was really derailed by that injury. Otherwise we would have seen it last year, and we ended up seeing it this year. So I got lucky in the sense that he stayed healthy and it all kind of came together for him. And that could have easily happened with DeAndre Swift. I just didn't envision it happening this year. So I wouldn't have made the trade. I would have kept the pick and I would have pivoted to something else. I don't know what I would have done, but I would have pivoted to something else. But once Eckler was there, I was like, okay, I'm more than happy to give up my first round pick in 2022 to get a first round talent on my roster this season and take it from there. and especially a younger guy doesn't have a lot of tread off the tires. And pass catching backs, they age in some cases like fine wine, you know, like they can hang around for a while. So, and bottom line with Eckler, he's just a great guy. I mean, he's a fun follow on Twitter.
Right.
He gets it. You know, I really like the guy. I mean, he's hard not to like.
Yeah. He loves fantasy football.
He loves fantasy football.
He's one of us really, you know?
Yeah.
We should get him on the show. He's almost too big for us, like fantasy football wise. I mean, obviously he is because he's a football player.
Yeah, he's such a nice guy.
Yeah,
he's sure. You feel like if you ask, there's like a 50% chance he might say yes. You know, yeah. Like he's that nice of a guy.
Fair enough, Brad. That's the challenge. We'll try and get Eckler on the show.
There you go.
Now, looking at the very next pick, though, and this will be the last thing before we move on, because I do want to just hear your thoughts about Cooper Kupp and the process of taking him there in the sixth round. But David Montgomery and seeing what he had done in 2020, and I mean, he had a decent season this year as well, but certainly in 2020 where he finished as the RB6. Is that something that you, like, you know, let's say Eckler's gone and Montgomery's still there. Would that have been a player you would have traded up for because you'd saw how much he produced there? Or do you think there was that more of a, you weren't as sold on him being able to reproduce that his 2020 season?
Yeah, I just wasn't. I mean, that trade wasn't because I wanted running back production at that spot. I wanted Austin Eckler and I just wanted to pay to get him. And it was one of those things, maybe it doesn't make sense, you know, and that's something, it's like, I want to go onto a brief tangent. You know, we talked about lessons. Like sometimes I really want to encourage the audience to go with your gut and go with your inner knowing. If you have a feeling, just go for it. I don't have data to back that up. You know, data is great. I think data is amazing, but data doesn't tell the whole story. And sometimes, and I know you guys tell me if you have or not, but we just get a sense. You get a sense for something because Austin Eckler, like there were some people that were high on him. There were some people that weren't high on him. I just felt like there's something there. I mean, yes, I like the guy, but I've always been high on him and it just hasn't come together. And talked about touchdown efficiency and talked about, you know, what about these other running back, Larry Runtree and Jackson and, you know, the pass catchers and Herbert's second year, all this stuff. And I was like, I just feel like he can catch, he can run, he can kind of do it all. If it all comes together for him, he's got a chance to be really, really good. But I didn't have anything objective necessarily to back that up. It was just a feeling that I had. And I couldn't necessarily quantify it, but I said to myself, I'm gonna do it. So I really want to encourage people, don't necessarily get bogged down in the data sometimes. Don't let people talk you off of things. If you have a feeling, just learn to trust it and stand in that uncomfortableness of taking a stand and trusting your gut. And you'll either win or you'll learn. But that's how you get better as a fantasy football player. If you're just out here and you're listening to what other people say and you're going off of that, even if it's me or somebody super smart like Kyle or Brad, like you guys get to draft your teams. If you're out there, you get to draft your team. Don't draft the team that I tell you to draft. Unless I tell you that this guy's injured and he's not going to play, then don't draft that guy. But draft your team. Draft the team that you want and you're either going to win or you're going to learn. But that's how you get better.
Well, and I mean, you say super smart guy. I mean, again, Eckler in the fourth round looks like a super smart pick because he finished as the RB2.
Yeah.
So good job.
A little luck never hurts.
Yeah. I mean, I totally get the, you know, going with your gut and going with your feeling. I mean, all through the summer, that's how I thought about James Conner in Arizona. I mean, I know he missed some practices, but I just felt like he was going to take over there. And I mean, he didn't necessarily do it at the beginning, but he was stealing touchdowns, which I mean, I certainly had him on several teams, which came in handy. And I talked about it here that eventually he was going to take over. And, you know, 18 touchdowns later, I couldn't be happier with his production. So, yeah. I mean, I just felt very similar to, I guess, how you felt with Eckler. So,
yeah, I love that. I love going for that because honestly, the thing is, we pay a lot of lip service to that. And you listen to people and they say, yeah, you know, draft your guys, go with your gut. But then when it's your pick and you're looking at that draft list and that guy maybe is three spots down on ADP, like I get the pull to just be like, oh man, you know, like this guy's got this other guy ranked three spots higher. Maybe I'll go for him and I'll try to get him on the way back. And then you don't get him. And then you're kicking yourself because, you know, James Conner scoring 18 touchdowns for somebody else's team or whatever. So
not a specific story there.
What's that?
Not a specific story there.
But sometimes you got you really just have to kind of stand in that fire because it's uncomfortable, and I get it. But that's really learning that gut sensation and going with learning how to trust your gut. And think about all the time and research that a lot of people out there put into fantasy football. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that just kind of quote unquote rip the page out of the magazine and show up at the draft and do okay. But I get the sense that a lot of people in our audience are not those people. You're investing that time and effort and you're analyzing these things and you're thinking about it and you're listening to, somebody like me pontificate about it for an hour. That's a big opportunity cost. You could be doing a lot of other things. Like, you're investing the time. Like, you have this knowledge. You have the ability to do this. So just trust it and go for it.
Instincts, right? Like, there's a reason. I'd say people should just trust their instincts in general. They're not even just a fantasy, not even just a sports thing, because you hear athletes say that all the time. Like, the best ones are the ones that are playing certainly football instinctive, right? But just in life in general, like, trust your instincts. Please. You as a person are smarter than most people will give you credit for, and I'm speaking to everyone individually, but in general, right? There's a lot of, oh yeah, this is the solution. This is the solution, not the, you can find the solution. These are the tools that will help you. And I hope that's kind of the approach that we give it, Brad. I hope we kind of, that comes across, right? I've always, respected the artists, the musicians that like understand their audience is intelligent. Like, I know Tool talks about that as a band all the time. They that's why they make such complex songs. That's also why they're willing to kind of, a patient audience, right? Like, knowing that, okay, they understand how good it is, so we're willing to take longer with the albums. Sometimes too long for us, but again, the new album's out. That's a bit of a Tool rant on my part.
I love that. It reminds me of the Thomas Edison quote where he said, "I didn't fail making a light bulb 10,000 times. I discovered 10,000 ways that didn't work. Try to make a light bulb that didn't work, and then eventually he did. Trusting your instincts. I love that.
How many wide receiver breakouts did people try thousands of times and then Cooper Kupp's the answer all along? So you got it 605 in our startup. Robert Woods actually weighed 606, the very next pick. So that was something that redraft or dynasty, interesting dynamic, seeing those guys go in the same round again. Sometimes this situation, back-to-back picks. So just in general, what did you see in Kupp to kind of, I guess he was your wide receiver two on this team. I can understand why you took DeAndre Hopkins. That seems like, okay, yeah, he's definitely done it. He's been the wide receiver one overall, I think, before. If not, he's been top five, certainly multiple occasions. So that would make sense. But with Kupp, what was that about? And I guess even if you want to compare it to like why you went Kupp over Woods too, because some people had different reasons for making those decisions.
Yeah, this isn't going to be particularly great podcasting or radio. The bottom line is I got lucky. I favored Kupp just a little bit more, and if Kupp would have got taken the pick before me, I would have taken Robert Woods and I'd have been completely happy with it. And the thing was, it just came down to, I just liked Kupp a little bit better. And, there wasn't anything specific. It was just, I think they're both going to be good. If push comes to shove, I'm probably going to take Cooper Kupp. And sure enough, that's what happened. And what really surprised me was that after I took him, Hamid took yet another wide receiver. And I think we were joking about it as the draft was going on. I was like, does Hamid know that like he has to fill other positions, or does he think he can start like 9 wide receivers? And Hamid, if you're watching, I love you.
The other thing too that we love, Doc, is I know I love, and I'm sure if Hamid's watching, he'll say the same thing. But everyone who has read the book, I think, all says the same thing, that, and they agree with you that injuries do in fact suck, but the book definitely doesn't. And that is the name of the book: Injuries Suck, But Your Fantasy Team Doesn't Have To, by Dr. James Ferretti. So Doc, why don't you tell us a little bit about the book before we transition into talking about some injuries?
Yeah, absolutely. So I appreciate that. So this, this is a book that I wrote because I was in the position of a lot of fantasy players before I was a doctor, where I got misled and just straight bamboozled by injury reports. And even during my training, when I should have quote unquote known better, I didn't. And I really kind of dug into some of these things and tried to look for patterns and look for ways that you can kind of read between the lines, read between you know, kind of interpret coach speak and player speak, and, you know, get a better approach to how to go about evaluating player injuries, how to anticipate potential missed games, and, you know, come up with more accurate injury timelines and get that all important advantage over your competition. So that was really the driver for the book. And I also included some things in there on game theory. And so not just injury analysis, kind of some of the background as to why do they do certain types of imaging, given that I'm a radiologist by trade, you know, why do they do a CAT scan versus an MRI versus an X-ray? What are some things that can be missed? What are some things that they're looking for? And give you the opportunity, you as the reader, to kind of make your own decisions. Because honestly, sometimes there's a lot of great injury content out there, but sometimes it's not going to be available to you. And honestly, things move so fast in football. You know, you get that notification, like this guy's injured or he's going to be out this week, and you got to move fast. So I want to try to empower the reader to be the best injury analyst that they know, and be able to make those decisions without having to run to Twitter and see what, you know, the, you know, whoever, whatever injury analyst you follow says, because you just might not have enough time. And sometimes that just getting that one player can put you over the top. So that was really kind of the genesis for the book, and really what I'm trying to do with it. So, you know, hopefully it's something that people, you know, it's available on Amazon. There's a link on my Twitter page at TFS Doc. You know, something that people go out and they check out and consume, and, you know, for a few bucks and a couple hours, you know, I want to try to make you into the best injury analyst, you know. So that's it. That's my spiel.
Probably my favorite chapter in the book is the one you talk about your formula for calculating replacement level for an injury player, and like, okay, you know, what's the kind of draft cost you're willing to take them at, and what you, where you need to draft your replacement. Anyway, it's a good, read the book to get the full explanation. I want to cheap it out here, but yeah,
there is a chapter, as Kyle's referring to, on how to make your own injury calculator. Like when you take the information that's given to you by modern, you know, by major media outlets, you kind of run it through the filter that I lay out for you in the book, and you're able to kind of calculate it and come up with a number and be able to evaluate, because how many times you're going into a draft and it's like, am I taking this guy too soon? Is this guy a value now? Like, I don't really know what to do. And then sometimes you can be off by multiple rounds. Like you end up taking a guy way too early. And, you know, I'll give you a quick example. Michael Thomas this year, as it turned out, there was always a risk that he wasn't going to play, but you wanted to be able to evaluate him adequately given the timetable that they gave us, where he was going to miss about 8 or 9 games. And he kind of worked out to be around the wide receiver 30 or 31 based on this injury calculator. And the thing is, if it got close to that, I probably would have ended up with Michael Thomas. The thing is that in every single draft that I did, Michael Thomas went 2 or 3 rounds higher than the injury calculator would have suggested that he should go. So I didn't end up with any Michael Thomas. And then I got a little bit lucky because Michael Thomas ended up being out for the rest of the year. So lucky for people that didn't draft him, unlucky for him and people that did draft him. But the point is that just knowing this is still a round or two too early based on the calculations that I have here. So somebody else is taking on all that extra risk. And even if he would have come back on time, they still would have been giving away value. As it turned out, there's always a non-zero chance that a player is out for the rest of the year, and then the production value goes to zero, and you have to calculate that in too. And that's part of the injury calculator. So those players that drafted him that early, they took on all that risk, and then they ended up with what they got. And everybody that didn't take him ended up with somebody else who was more productive.
Range of outcomes, right? And I think I spoke with that with Thomas specifically. Like I was definitely on kind of the team of, yeah, Thomas being overdrafted. I think I kind of quoted, like, if you look at what he did in 2020, you know, injury shortened season, and, you know, some games kind of, you know, leaving games early kind of counted against him. But he ended up as, I think, the wide receiver 50 or 49 in points per game, I guess, depending on your scoring setting. And so I was kind of draft him around there, not quite. So I was even more risk averse on Thomas than you were, kind of around wide receiver 30, but really he was going closer to wide receiver 20. And that's, again, where the problem was.
Yeah. And so neither one of us realistically were going to end up with him. But I think the real benefit is that, you know, you get to add it onto your subjective, you know, it's like you have a thought. It's like, you know, you had the subjective feeling, I'm not really high on Michael Thomas because of X, Y, and Z. And that's great. this is something that you could add on to that. It's another tool where you can say, now I have the subjective and then I have something that's objective and I can kind of put them together and say, do they match up? And if they're both going in the other direction, that just kind of reinforces your decision. If not, then maybe it's something you look at a little more. And then I would still say, go with your, you know, don't go with the injury calculator, go with your gut. But it is another tool that you can utilize to have something that's a little more tangible and say, okay, when is it getting close? Because honestly, if I was a little bit higher on him and it's getting around wide receiver 25, 26, maybe I take a shot then. Maybe I feel like it's worth it because I'm in that range. You know, I'm not taking on as much risk. I can live with that, especially if I didn't like anybody else that was going around there. So it's a way you can kind of play with it and you can utilize it as the draft kind of falls to you. You know, just another tool in the tool shed to kind of make your evaluations on the fly. Because again, you don't have a lot of time. Sometimes things happen. You're a guy, you get snapped off right before your pick. What do I do? You know, it's just another tool. So you don't make those mistakes that can cost you.
So Brad, I know there were a couple of players that we're going to talk about the, you know, the NFL playoffs and specifically the championship Sunday, the AFC and NFC championship games, a couple of players in those games may be injured. So I know you had some questions for Doc about that, but I guess before those specific players, did you have any questions about the book or anything for injury analysis wise in general for Doc?
Yeah, real quick. With the book, I wrote it down. I'm going to check that out for you and hopefully become a better injury analysis myself. But you're talking a lot about injuries that happen before draft or whatever. Is there a section in the book, you know, kind of week to week, kind of how to manage that, massage that, trying to figure it out? Because nothing makes me more frustrated than, oh, Damian Harris, he was full practice on Friday or on Wednesday, and then Thursday he didn't practice, and then Friday he was a limited participant, and he goes in with a question. Well, you're like, you know what am I doing here? Because you know Ramondre Stevenson's there, ready to rock and roll, and do you play Harris? So yeah, I'm just curious if there was some stuff in there about the book.
Yeah, well, Brad, I have good news and I have bad news. The bad news is there is not one chapter looking out for those things. The good news is there's at least three chapters talking about that.
Fantastic.
Talking about how to read between the lines of, you know, coach speak. What does it mean if somebody's day to day versus week to week? How do you interpret X-rays are negative? Is that good? Is that bad? It depends. What does it depend on?
Right.
And you know, practice reports and evaluating things in conjunction with the type of injury and what's a reasonable timetable for all sorts of injuries, muscle strains, tendon injuries, ligament injuries, bone bruises, different types of breaks, things like that. Mm-hmm. What's a reasonable time frame? And then is the report that you're getting significantly divergent from what you would expect given that injury?
I gotcha.
High ankle sprain, you know, usually has a certain timetable, 4 to 5 weeks. If they're saying he's going to be back in a week or two, probably not going to happen. So that's just a really broad example of some of this stuff. It gets more nuanced, but there's definitely tons of stuff in there that I think you're going to love. Awesome. So I'd love to get some feedback once you look into it and you tell me what you think.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. I'm going to get my highlighter ready for that book. And as we go into the off season here, which I guess there's never really an off season in fantasy football, but
definitely.
Right now, going into the championship rounds, there's four players. I think it was four that I had questions on. I guess one would be the Honey Badger out in Kansas City. I was talking to Kyle, I guess before the show, and I was out of town, and really the only game that I got to see was the second half of that Chiefs Bills game. And I was certainly wondering, you know, what happened to him, where was he? Cause they mentioned it a couple times about obviously how wide open the middle was and how Allen was exploiting that. And because Matthew was out, so I wasn't exactly sure. I guess what was it? Sounds like it was a concussion. I guess he's going through the protocols and all that stuff, but I guess what are your thoughts starting with him?
Yeah, so with the Honey Badger, he did get injured in the first quarter, didn't come back, and was ruled out with a concussion. Allegedly, he's feeling okay now. But as you said, he's in the protocol. So the thing with the concussion protocol, it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's good that there is one,
right,
but there really aren't any hard and fast rules. You can progress through the protocol and then you can have a setback where your symptoms return and then you, you know, take a step back in the protocol and everybody kind of responds differently. So it's good that there's objective criteria as opposed to, I don't know about Kyle, but I think when we were growing up, it was like you got a concussion and then you were out for two plays. They gave you some smelling salts and sent you back out there. So it's way better than that. But with the Honey Badger, we just got to watch practice reports and during the week, and that'll tell the story. And hopefully he's okay. But I think you could be confident now that once players are cleared from the concussion protocol, that they're at significantly less risk of having recurrence of symptoms. Unlike, I'm thinking of like going really old school, like Al Toon. I think Al Toon has the NFL record, wide receiver for the Jets. For those of you that were, you know,
I was around.
Yeah, you and I were around. I'm sure a fair cross section of our audience was not. But go look him up. I think he has the NFL record of concussions. He averaged like one every two games when when I was growing up. It was pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, great. And I had a question with the Cinderella team. I guess there's technically a couple of them, but with the Cincinnati Bengals, Trey Hendrickson, obviously a very important piece to their defensive line. He can cause some havoc. Is he going to be able to get in there and you know chase down Mahomes or make Mahomes uncomfortable? I think I saw that he came out of the game, came back in at the end, but there's still some iffiness on there.
Yeah. So Trey Hendrickson's had a rough month. He had a back injury in December. He had COVID in January and then got a concussion in the wild card game. And, it, you know, is dealing with, you know, assorted other ailments. So he's had a rough go of it, but it looks like he's going to be okay for the conference final this week. And he really is a tremendous player in the wild card game. I'm a Raiders fan. And he was really disruptive in that game. And I think that he probably saved the game for them on the third down play where he kind of got in the way of that crossing route by Waller. I think if he's not there, it might be a whole different story. I think Waller has a chance to catch that and go and score a touchdown on that play. And it's kind of forgotten about because then Carr throws the interception on the next play. And that was the big play. I don't think that was the big play. I think Trey Hendrickson's play was the big play and that won the game for him.
Gotcha.
It's the Dante Hightower tackling Lynch the play before Wilson throws the interception, right? Because if he doesn't tackle him at the 1 yard line, Lynch is going in and scoring, and then a totally different story, right?
There you go.
Football, right? Just a sequence of play after the other. Oh, but yeah, I mean, that's what it takes for a. You said Cinderella team, Brad. I'd call them the Cincerella team in the Bengals.
I like it. I'm glad you can say that. I don't know if I could pull that one out. Yeah, that's pretty accurate, Kyle. And I guess probably the last one is going to be out in San Francisco, the big man on the end, Trent Williams. Is he going to be available to make an impact in the game on Sunday? And because they certainly need him. I know he's definitely a mauler when it comes to the rushing game, but he's going to have to give Garoppolo, an opportunity to try and throw. And hopefully, you know, Garoppolo can stay out of his own way and do some things. But I guess what are you hearing on him?
So with Trent Williams, he sprained his ankle and he was able to finish the game, but allegedly or by reports, he was on crutches afterwards, which isn't necessarily that disconcerting. What I would watch out for is reports of whether he's dealing with a high ankle sprain or, you know, the so-called mid ankle sprain, which spoiler alert, there isn't really a mid ankle sprain. There's low ankle sprain and there's other, and if it's other, then it's really bad. Even low ankle sprains, as we saw with Kyler Murray and Saquon Barkley, they can be problematic. And you know, they could keep him out for a few weeks. The good news is that given the time of year that it is, and if it's a low ankle sprain and the fact that he was able to finish the game, I think he's going to be able to go out there, provided we don't hear something like there's a high ankle sprain and there's this, you know, severe injury. He's going to be able to go out there. And if the 49ers are able to advance and he has a low ankle sprain, it actually could heal up pretty significantly in the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. Sure. So there is, you know, there is a chance that this could really end up being something that does not affect him going forward. And one other thing I want to throw in there real quick for the viewers and everybody else about high ankle sprains, which is really interesting. And it kind of makes me think of the Antonio Brown situation. High ankle sprains, unlike low ankle sprains, if you remember when Saquon Barkley sprained his ankle, the thing was like, you know, the size of my head. And he was out for a month, but that was just one set of ligaments. It was a low ankle sprain, kind of garden variety, just severe low ankle sprain. High ankle sprains, they tend not to swell up or bruise up that much. So they don't look, quote unquote, look that bad. They are extremely painful and they are extremely limiting. So they can be frustrating for coaches because they, quote unquote, don't look that bad. And they can really get on players sometimes. It's like, you know, it's not swollen, it's not bruised. Like, why can't you go out there and move? Like, you're dogging it. And they may not be. It just happens to be that the structures that are injured are on the inside of the leg as opposed to the outside of the leg. So you just don't see it, but they feel it. And, you know, it comes down to trust between the coaches and the players at that point. And if you have, you know, it's like any other relationship, if there's fractures in the trust, you might have some problems. So just something to keep in mind that high ankle sprains might not look bad, but they behave bad.
So fractures and trust can be just as bad as fractures and bones.
Can be worse in some cases.
Yeah, we know a little bit about that. Yeah, we know a little bit about that down here in Jacksonville as well. Fractures.
Yes, and trust. Indeed.
No. Thanks for your time, Doc. Kyle, did you have any names or?
No, I actually wanted to fracture this conversation, just kind of give a preview of the playoffs in general. So again, AFC Championship game, Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. On the NFC side, the Los Angeles Rams hosting the San Francisco 49ers. So a pair of division opponents, which makes it a best of three series for the 2021 season. But looking at our NFL playoff challenge, Brad, for fantasy, I don't know if you looked at the standings since after the divisional round.
I did. I did take a peek and I recognized the name at the top there.
Yeah. So at 310 points, we have the rundown _BH. That's Brad's Twitter handle, by the way. So yeah, Brad taking the lead. And I think, you know, Patrick Mahomes times two bonus. What did he score for you? 78 points. That's probably a big reason. Yeah. Wow. But yeah,
and Tyreek Hill, I think, had 42, if I remember right, something like that. But yeah, but no, I lost my Buccaneers, so I gotta start replacing them. I was gunning for a Chiefs Bucks rematch, and that didn't necessarily happen. Even though I did take the Rams on the show last week, I did pick them as well as the Bengals. Like to give another shout out about that, and. So yeah, I got some work to do on some running backs and some receivers to stay at the top.
And I will say it is close at the top. But you're at 310. Marcus, yeah, who we talked about, was leading after last week. He's at 305. Now he has lost his entire team. His whole roster had times two bonus, but it was entirely Bucks and Bills. So Now he has no one going into next week. So he won't have anyone with the times three bonus. So he's at a bit of a disadvantage, even though he's only down by five to you. He's kind of maybe not who you should be more as concerned with as the who's in third right now. It's my friend Sean, actually. He had 301 points, only nine behind you. And now Sean had kind of he did something that I was interested in. And I did this with Burrow. It was, again, looking at, okay, when is there a big disparity when there's a wide receiver, but the quarterback is not rostered very much. And I said that with Burrow was only at 9% versus Chase at 23%. So my thinking going Burrow Chase stack, which is, you know, now I get the times three bonus. So I benefit from that was a lot of people who have Chase probably don't have Burrow. So I'll differentiate myself by having both. Cooper Kupp was at like close to 50% rostership. It was over 40, but then at week one, Matt Stafford had 1% rostership in the whole event. And so Sean did this where he stacked Stafford and Kupp. So a lot of people had Kupp, but barely anyone had Stafford. And he's getting a big, big advantage there. And, you know, Stafford ended up scoring 56 last week. So he gets that combo at times three. He gets the running back duo of Joe Mixon and Elijah Mitchell at times three. He has Debo Samuel at times three. He could get CJ Uzoma tight end at times three as well. So Sean's roster is looking good. He only has to replace his kicker and his defense. Okay, so right now I'd say you and Sean kind of probably the front runners.
That's dicey.
And especially if the Rams and Chiefs make it and it's you know, your Mahomes Hill stack versus his Stafford Cup stack. That'll be intense to see how that goes. So I know for myself, I've got most of my roster to replace. I think one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to maybe lean into the Bengals a little more, because that may be my, because I'm in last in the group, by the way. I guess I kind of wanted to throw that in at the end of the seven people in our full press coverage group. I'm in dead last right now. So I really need to catch up. My best hope is probably the Bengals winning. So I might lean in and play a lot more Bengals this week. Like, I've got to replace my kicker like you, Brad. I think I'm going to go to Evan McPherson. It kind of helps already having the Burrow Chase stack.
Sure.
I'm probably going to play T. Higgins because no one else has played him in our contest yet. So it's not like, because if I went to Cup now, there's a few people who already have him going in with times three. So I feel like I'm not at a disadvantage. So I think I'm going to play T. Higgins and have the Burrow Chase Higgins stack as well as McPherson. I've got the Chiefs defense kind of going through. At tight end, no one has George Kittle yet in our group either. Almost everyone has Kelsey or Gronk, and my friend Sean is CJ Uzoma. So without no one with Kittle, like, I think he was at like 4% rostership. I think I'm going to go to Kittle. And then it's, again, I have no idea what to do with running back in this contest, but I think I'm going to play Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And then from there, I've kind of got to decide, am I going to go Cam Akers? I know you got Cam Akers last week. That may be a good pickup that you get the times two bonus on. Do I go with Sony Michel? Do I go with an extra Bengal with Joe Mixon? Even though I think like three or four people in our group already have Joe Mixon at times two, times three. So like there's a lot of dynamics there. I still haven't decided what to do at running back. And usually I know exactly what I want to do running back in some other position. So this contest has been not so great for me because I've got no idea what to do at RB the entire time. Honestly, I was talking week one, am I going to go Elijah Mitchell or Damian Harris? And good thing I didn't go Harris, but honestly, Elijah Mitchell turned out to be the right play. So kind of kicking myself for not taking Elijah Mitchell and instead going with Derrick Henry and Daryl Williams week one. That was not good. I remember I overreacted to Fournette being out. Honestly, I should have stuck with Fournette because he got the two touchdowns, would have at least had that at the times two bonus. So yeah. So don't listen to me this year. I didn't know what to do at running back, but thanks for listening anyway to the great advice podcast wise. But yeah. So I guess just quick previews for the AFC championship game. What do you guys and the NFC championship, like, who do you guys expect to be in the Super Bowl? So we'll start with the guest, Brad. Doc, what are you thinking? What do you think is going to be the Super Bowl matchup?
Okay, let me set the stage for you. Okay, so for our good friend Jeff, the big boss man, Jeff Lambert, over at Going for Two, and also for one of the guests that we had that I was fortunate enough to be on, another big 49ers fan, Stefania Bell. I'm going with the 49ers to advance out of the NFC. And I think that means they'll have beaten the Rams three times this year. And that's really tough to do, but I think they're going to pull it off.
It'll be like six or seven times in a row or something like that too.
Okay. Well, I'm going with the 49ers, and in the AFC, in an upset, I'm going to, for my friend Dan, I'm going to take the Bengals, and we're going to have a rematch of the last time the Bengals advanced in the playoffs. And as a surprise twist, Joe Montana comes out of retirement and actually starts for the 49ers instead of Jimmy Garoppolo. And we get to replay the whole thing all over again.
Joe Montana versus Joe Burrow, man. We're just average Joe's watching. That'll be
Joe
great.
Cool 1.0 versus Joe Cool 2.0. And I don't think it gets better than that. So, but yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen, but I like the 49ers and the Bengals.
Brad, what's your Super Bowl prediction right now?
You know, Kyle, I am going to be certainly cheering for Cincerelli. Is that how you said it? Cincerella?
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, you know, like I said, had Burrow on my fantasy team, and I'd love to see a new face in the Super Bowl, but I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I like the Chiefs to advance to their third straight Super Bowl, and I'm going to go with Doc and come along with the 49ers. I think they certainly got out of Green Bay very lucky. I mean, I don't know if the Rams are gonna have all the special teams blunders that the Packers did, but I think that their defense matches up well with the Niners, and just the way that they run the offense as well. They're methodical. They're not in a hurry. They're going to get the ball to Deebo Samuel and get the ball in his hands. Watch out for Brandon Ayuk as well this week. And I like their defense and what they can do. I think they're going to, you know, keep LA from having a home Super Bowl.
Now, like I've been picking every week, I've kind of just been going with the goal line guy, right? Doing the goal line guy numbers and then kind of picking based off that. I went 5-for-6 in wild card weekend and then 1-for-4 in divisional rounds. I'm not sure. I'm going to stick with it, though, the process over results. Pretty close, actually, Rams 49ers. I think the ultimate edge there is just the Rams offense better passing inside the five than the 49ers are. They're definitely lower. Now, both defenses are really tough at it, so maybe that edge isn't even there anyway. But leaning slightly Rams, and then the Chiefs end up with the best goal line grade of any team so far in the playoffs. So I think they will beat the Bengals. I think they're I think their defense might be too much for the Bengals in terms of pass rush. And I don't know that Burrow will be able to keep up with Mahomes, even though, again, I'm kind of wishful thinking that in our playoff challenge that ends up being the case. So maybe I'm kind of the reverse jinxing it here. But yeah, I don't know, maybe it's too early to call it. I kind of feel like the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl, though. I don't know that as much as I think both the Rams and 49ers defenses are great, I don't know that either can stop him and either offense can. Like, that was the problem with the Chiefs last year, is that the Bucs defense was stopping them, and then Brady's offense was just at will scoring. Like, I don't know that I trust Stafford or Garoppolo to do either of that. So I don't know. I'm kind of just maybe early predicting, saying that the Chiefs are going to win, but obviously, never too early to bring on Doc for some great injury analysis. So really appreciate that, Doc. And again, on Twitter at TFS Doc, which the fantasy sports doc. So just for anyone to remember, that's how I always remember it, because that is actually what it stands for. So it's good to remember that. And the book is Injuries Suck, But Your Fantasy Team Doesn't Have to. So again, Doc, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to leave the viewers and the watchers with this. I do have an article coming out in the offseason. We're talking about elite production. So the article is how to get potential RB1 production from RB3s in 2022. So I don't want to give away the farm here, but I'll give you a couple of guys to keep an eye on as we start doing best ball drafts and dynasty drafts at running back. I won't get into too much detail, just give you the names. Chris Carson, Seattle, still has all that potential. He's going in the double digit rounds. When he plays, he's a plug and play RB1. Same street, different neighborhood, Will Fuller, completely forgotten about. He evaporated. What happened to him? He's the exact same player, but at wide receiver. When he's healthy, when he's available, he is a plug and play wide receiver one. Yeah. When he's not, figure something else out, but he's never going to be cheaper. And then Darren Waller, that iliotibial band, lateral knee injury, whatever it was, I don't really know what happened there, but what I saw of him in the playoff game, that's a Darren Waller that I remember. And his draft price is going to be depressed because some other guys took a step up and he took a step back. But that potential is still there. He was tight end 2 and tight end 3 the last couple of years before this one. And he could do that again. And he's going to be at a significant discount compared to what you could get for his production. So just some guys to keep in mind that are going to be severely discounted, but can give you elite level production when they're on the field. And that's it. Thank you guys so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. It's really a great opportunity, not only to work with you again, Kyle, but to get to meet you, Brad, and to get some exposure to a new set of a new audience, as opposed to just being over going for two. Always happy to come on and meet new people and get some information out there and just to talk fantasy football. And I really enjoyed it. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a pleasure meeting you, Doc, and I'll be shooting some trades your way. Well, we'll see what happens.
All right, just don't ask for Taysom Hill because he's not going anywhere.
I wrote that down. No problem.
I guess Brad is looking for quarterbacks, so yeah. And if you're looking for any more advice, any fantasy content, be sure to follow us on Twitter at FPC_fantasypod. I already gave Brad's Twitter account earlier, but I'll say it again: @TheRundown_BH. And I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the full Press Coverage app, available for free on Android and iOS stores. Gives you access to all the great written content from Full Press Coverage. I guess lately it's been more Packers articles for me than fantasy articles. Some of those have been depressing, especially lately when you're recapping playoff losses. But again, all that great NFL playoff content, whether it's written, podcasts, or access the Full Press Radio Network, you get it all through the Full Press Coverage app. So download that today for free. Also, shout out to PA the Second on Twitter at PA_IIOfficial. He lets us use the song Melody as our intro and outro music. So thank you for that, PA. Thank you, Doc. Thank you, Brad. I appreciate talking with both of you, interacting, and hopefully the listeners appreciate it as well.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it, of course.
Yep, sure, guys. Enjoy the games, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and after Championship Sunday, all that's left is the Super Bowl. So Brad and I will be back to preview that next time on the Full Press Fantasy Pod.